Welcome in to Words with Wallace. I'm your host, Nick Wallace. Coming at you, it is Wednesday, November 13th. What is up, everybody? As you can tell by the title of the episode, today I'm going to be giving out my NBA Cup predictions. Now, you might be listening to this thinking, Nick, what are you talking about? The NBA Cup started on Tuesday, November 12th, the day before you're recording this. Well, that's a great point. Anonymous listener, wanted to explain that I'm actually getting this out a little bit late. This is going to be the second time I'm recording this podcast because, unfortunately, I recorded a fantastic podcast on Monday night, giving you all my NBA Cup predictions the day before the tournament started. However, my microphone was on mute for the entire time. That's the second time I've done that within the past couple months, recorded a full podcast episode with no audio whatsoever. So that one's on me. Hand up. Gonna be better, can be better, will be better moving forward. It's just been a tough couple days. I'm not gonna lie to you. You know, I actually was supposed to have a guest on Monday, right? Had some technical difficulties that fell through. Planned out a whole new podcast based around the NBA Cup. Finally sit down to record that podcast late at night. And then when I found out I was on mute the entire time, it just broke my spirit, guys. What was I supposed to do? Didn't get much better yesterday on Tuesday. Took a fat L in the men's league. Get out of the game. Check my phone, find out my Celtics lost in their first NBA Cup game. Hopefully I'm not spoiling that for anybody. Still trying to figure out exactly how that happened. So, needless to say, past couple days did not go as planned, but we're here, we're locked in, we have a fantastic podcast for you today. You're just going to have to take my word for it that I didn't change any of my predictions after being able to sit down and watch at least part of night one of the NBA Cup action. But that being said, on tonight, Wednesday, November 13th, it was an awesome night in the NBA. Let's just fly around. Hit upon a bunch of headlines before I actually go through and discuss everything you need to know about the NBA Cup. First and foremost, tonight, it has been an awesome night in the NBA. We had what I believe is the best individual performance of the entire year. I just watched the fourth quarter and overtime of Bucks, Pistons, and Giannis was immaculate. Finished with 59 points against the Pistons, and I don't know if you guys saw who the Bucks were trotting out in the starting lineup, but it was not pretty. No Dame, still no Chris Middleton. It was like Taurean Prince, Brook Lopez, Gary Trent, and I believe AJ Green got the nod for the Bucks as well. So it was really just Giannis against a much more competitive Pistons team this year. Game goes to overtime because they call a foul on Ron Holland on an alley-oop attempt with 0 seconds left in the game. I didn't believe it was a foul. Ron Holland just has to make one of two free throws to win the game for the Pistons, and he bricks them both. Ball doesn't lie. The Bucks end up dominating in overtime in large part because of Giannis, and he has been awesome all year. So it is just nice for Giannis to have this performance. Hopefully it gets people talking about him in a positive light again. I'm not sure if people have been paying attention to the Bucks, really just seeing their terrible record and, you know, probably taking some shots at Giannis along the way. But I think he put that narrative to rest with how awesome he was tonight. I did have to check the box score and tune in for the end of Spurs Wizards because Wemby put up 50 points against the Washington Wizards, obviously a career high for Wemby. Haven't been able to comb through the highlights and see exactly how he got to that number yet, but they did end up beating the Washington Wizards, and Jordan Poole had a pretty awesome game in his own right. He had 40 points, and I'm not going to lie, I hate Jordan Poole, but I have to admit, he has been a lot more efficient for the Wizards this year. It seems like he's figured it out in the second year of just being the main guy that defenses are queuing in on in Washington. Karl Anthony Towns had 46 points in a loss to the Bulls, which brings the Knicks below 500, which is absolutely insane. And then finally for tonight, Jared McCain, rookie for the Philadelphia 76ers, put up 34 points in a loss against the Cavaliers. The Cavs advanced to 13-0. And I did just want to highlight that because I hate Jared McCain. I'm not going to dive into exactly why on this podcast. I'm sure you guys can figure it out, but he has been lighting it up for the Sixers, and they really need all the production they can get with no Maxey, no Embiid, no Paul George tonight. They're starting Kyle Lowry and bringing in Jared McCain to play heavy minutes, but I can't lie. The rookie has been pretty impressive over there in Philadelphia. So that's just the highlights of all the storylines going on tonight in the NBA. But the important thing that I wanted to touch on before we dive into the specifics of the NBA Cup is the game of the year that I saw last night, which of course, again, was night one of the NBA Cup, Mavs at Warriors. This game, of course, was headlined by Klay Thompson's return to the Bay Area. And this was, again, my favorite game I've watched start to finish all year long. Came all the way down to the wire, and it ended up being a Steph Curry masterclass in which Steph had 12 of his 37 points in the final 3 minutes. It's crazy how many years we've been watching Steph now, and the excitement at Golden State home games when Steph is in the zone, the crowd is feeling it at the end of a close game, there's still nothing like it. Like, there really isn't. He's so special with the ball in his hands, the way the Warriors are able to attack switches. On the final play that I'm sure all you guys have seen by now, they were able to do like a double switch situation in which they dragged Derek Lively all the way out onto Steph Curry on the perimeter, and of course he made him look like a fool out there. And again, I'm not going to give Derek Lively too much shit, although maybe I should, because I know Derek Lively was very outspoken about Rudy Gobert not being able to guard Luka Doncic on the perimeter of that, what was it, a Western Conference Finals game last year, and Derek Lively seemed to have a lot to say about that. Well, buddy, it's not exactly easy for an NBA center whose main task is protecting the rim to get dragged out in the perimeter and guard one of the most talented ball handlers on the planet. Lively got put in that situation last night, and he, you know, rightfully so, looked like an absolute fool trying to guard Steph Curry, and Steph ends up icing the game. So that was really exciting to watch from Steph, but just throughout the entire game, I mean, it was a pretty special night. I mean, Klay played pretty awesome, I'm not going to lie. 22 points, and he shot 50% from three, so what else can you really ask of the guy? Kyrie and Luka also played pretty well in their own rights, combining for 52 points. But I think the couple headlines from this I wanted to hit on was, first of all, the Mavs' third consecutive loss in a row that came down to the final few minutes of action. I believe they lost to, what, the Suns in a really close game, they lost to the Nuggets in a really close game, and now they lost to the Golden State Warriors in a really close game. Now, granted, all those teams are extremely talented, but for the Mavericks to be one game under 500, you know, what, 11 or 12 games into the season at this point in time, that's not great for a team that's trying to defend the Western Conference title. And look, I just think that it's way too early to be saying this, but I'm just going to go out and tell you what my gut is thinking. When you have this many talented players on the Mavericks, right, I think what I've seen of Najee Marshall and Quentin Grimes and Klay Thompson, like, all the new additions for the Mavs have fit in pretty flawlessly with their system. Like, they're looking pretty good, all things considered, right? You know, when you have that and you have supposedly two of what people say is like the top five closers in the entire NBA, and Luka and Kyrie on the same exact team, like, why are you having an issue finishing games? And I think it does come down to coaching. Now, I'm not saying they should get rid of Jason Kidd or anything like that, but I am saying they're at least locked into Jason Kidd for what, one, maybe 2 years after this at the absolute minimum, right? After they make that NBA Finals run last year. Like, that guy's job was, you know, he was maybe on the hot seat during the early portion of last season because it was, what, year three of Jason Kidd or year four of Jason Kidd at that point in time. But I think after that Finals run, he's basically pretty safe in his role. And that might be end up being, you know, something that Mavs fans aren't happy about in the long term. Like, you're kind of stuck with the guy now. I've never really been a big fan of Jason Kidd. I think it just speaks more to the talent of Luka Doncic and what Nico Harrison has been able to do with the pieces around Luka as to why they were able to make that run. But it is just something worth noting with the Mavericks, that coaching can be a little head-scratching at times with some of the late-game decisions. And I do think ultimately the Mavs are going to be just fine. Like, they're way too talented and not figured out, especially with how banged up the Western Conference is. So we're going to talk more about that in a second. But my final thoughts on last night, Mavs-Warriors. What the hell was up with the hats? The hats that they gave out to everybody in the arena at the Chase Center in Golden State. Like, I understand that Klay Thompson was like a big boat guy, right? Like, obviously he played in the Bay Area for, what, 14 years, and he was very famously like ride his boat to home games, which is very badass. Like, good for Klay for having a pretty unique routine to get to the games and everything like that. But like, they gave out these cheesy captain hats with like the Golden State Warriors logo that to everybody in the arena, or at least everybody in the first couple rows, was wearing them. And I'm like, the guy played for 14 years, he has four championships, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt about it, one of the most beloved personalities in the NBA in the past, like, 30 years. And, like, you honor him by giving out these cheesy hats? Like, I know people in the Bay understand Klay, and they seem to have, like, a really good relationship there, but I just thought that was such a lame and corny way to honor him. Like, I understand you had to give something away, but you had to give away, like, a stupid, like, novelty hat? Like, it almost undermines how great Klay was for the Warriors for 14 years. Like, maybe I just don't get it because I'm obviously an outsider, somebody from the East Coast, a fan of the Celtics, who has no idea, has never even been to California, has no idea about any of the culture out there, but I thought the hats were some of the dumbest shit I've seen this year. That's just my honest two cents. Warriors fans, please chime in and let me know if I'm on the ball with that take. Moving on, before we can finally get into some NBA Cup action, I did just want to cover a couple more headlines because, unfortunately, this past weekend, man, we had so much terrible NBA injury news come out. Starting off with Ja Morant, and really these are all stars in the Western Conference that have just been hammered by injuries. Ja Morant, of the Memphis Grizzlies is now week to week with a hip injury, so he's expected to miss at least 2 weeks. And that's tough for the Grizzlies, who have already been missing Desmond Bain for a large portion of the season. Jaren Jackson missed a couple games early in the year. They had Marcus Smart, who's been out for a while. Like, the Grizzlies, again, like, have just already started the year really banged up, and this jaw injury isn't going to help. Zion Williamson is out indefinitely with a hamstring injury, and the Pelicans are bracing for him to miss 4 to 6 weeks. This is especially notable for the Pelicans because DeJounte Murray, CJ McCollum, Herb Jones, and Jordan Hawkins are all already injured for the Pelicans. And if I'm not mistaken, Jose Alvarado is hurt as well for the Pelicans, a guy who had stepped up really well in the absence of DeJounte Murray. So the Pelicans are absolutely decimated right now. I already had them as a team on the outside looking in for the Western Conference play-in picture. Like, I picked them to be the 11th seed in the West because I just didn't really understand their rotations, felt like they should have made a move. They did just get Trey Murphy back, but, you know, that take is starting to look right, and it's not for any of the reasons I expected. They've just been decimated by injuries, and again, Zion out 4 to 6 weeks with a hammy at least. That is not a good sign. Kevin Durant, a guy that has been, certainly should be in MVP conversations for how special he was to start the season. He was incredible for the Suns in clutch time. He is going to be out for at least 2 weeks with a calf strain, so that's a huge bummer for the Suns, who have been rolling and are currently atop the Western Conference standings. And then finally, the worst news of them all, just due to the severity of the injury, Chet Holmgreen of the Oklahoma City Thunder is going to be out basically 3 months. They're saying 8 to 10 weeks, but in NBA terms, especially with a team that I expect to be really well off as far as being able to hold their own in the regular season anyways, I'd expect Chet to miss basically until the All-Star break, which is kind of crazy to say this early in the season. But Chet had a pelvic fracture after he was playing against the Warriors the other night, collided with Andrew Wiggins in midair, and fell really awkwardly on that hip. So the West is absolutely decimated. So again, really not worried about some of those teams that are at the bottom of the standings right now, like the Mavericks, who have been struggling to say the least, but I think they'll figure it out, especially with health being on their side right now. And then finally, the last storyline I want to talk to before we finally get into this NBA Cup action is Nikola Jokic, man. I didn't really have an organic way to work him into this segment, but I just felt the need. Before Giannis's performance tonight, Jokic had what I believe was hands down the best individual performance of the year a couple games ago against the Dallas Mavericks, in which he put up 37 points, 18 rebounds, and 15 assists. He's averaging 30, 15, and 12 on the year while shooting 56%. Both from the field and from three-point land. So the Nuggets are now 7-3 despite Jamal Murray missing 3 games already in this young season. And I've honestly been pretty impressed with what I've seen during their makeshift shooting guard rotation, right? Christian Brown has been getting the start for the Nuggets all year long, and he plays with a serious edge. Like, I've seen that guy try to put Rudy Gobert on a poster a couple times already this year. Like, he just goes to the rim without any fear whatsoever. Julian Strother seems to be one of their only consistent sources of outside shooting in this early season, and so he's been much needed. And of course, Peyton Watson, we already knew he was a really special athlete and pretty fantastic on the defensive end of the court. He had a massive block, a game-winning block, as a matter of fact, that sealed a win over the Oklahoma City Thunder the other night. And so I'm just saying in general, like, just take note as to what Jokic is doing with this supporting cast. Like, it's not surprising he's able to take these role players that we had real question marks about heading into the season and just making them way better than what we could have expected. The Nuggets are 7-3. They're just fine despite having some injuries. And I have to note it because, again, the gap between Jokic and the second best player in the NBA right now is so ridiculous. Like, obviously, Giannis and Luka have to be the next two guys in that conversation, in my opinion. But they're really not close right now. Like, Jokic is just increased his productivity, he's increased his scoring, he's touching the ball even more than what he did at any point the past several years because the team has needed him to, and he's stepped up to the challenge. Now, is this sustainable for 82 games? Like, I'm not going to say it's not, because nobody can really say a damn thing that's negative about Jokic. Like, anybody doubting him at this point in time is foolish. And I do just have to note, he's plus 220 for MVP right now. Like, obviously he is the odds-on favorite to win the award, but getting plus 200, plus 220, depending on what site you're looking at for an MVP selection. I know Shea was my pick heading into the season, and obviously it's still way too early to be calling out any awards, but getting Jokic for plus money with how ridiculous he's been this season feels like a good value to me. So if you guys are thinking Jokic could get this award, or Jokic is the best player in the world, you guys agree with that take, you might as well take him, because I didn't think there was a world in which he would be given a fourth MVP at this point in time, unless he dramatically increased his level of play, combined with the Nuggets being one of the top teams in the Western Conference. But so far, he's doing exactly that. He's actually been that much better than what he's been the past few years, and the Nuggets are still winning games. So, wanted to highlight Jokic's excellence as well in this early season. So, Let's move on and talk about the NBA Cup. Now, I know, again, I would have liked to have done this one day before all the action started last night, so you'll have to bear with me. But in case anybody just randomly flicked on the NBA last night, they were confused as to what the hell they were looking at with the rainbow courts, seemingly more intense crowds, everything like that. It's because it's the NBA Cup. And if you're wondering, hey, Nick, what's the NBA Cup? It is just the same exact event that they started last year. Last year, it was referred to as the NBA in-season tournament. This year, they changed it to the NBA Cup, which is much better. Smacked a sponsorship onto there as well. I believe Emirates is sponsoring the entire event. But effectively, it's the same exact format. So the tournament started last night, and it runs through the middle of December. Games are going to be on Tuesdays and Friday night. So every Tuesday night game and Friday night game between now and mid-December is going to be a part of the NBA Cup. And there's still wild courts. You guys probably already noticed that, right? The very colorful courts. Although they did make the courts a little bit better. I was pretty against the courts last year. I thought they looked pretty terrible with like a giant like runway slash landing strip in the middle of the court on all 30 teams. And I just hated it. I couldn't stand the design. They still have the very loud colors this year, but at least they removed like the runway landing strip in the middle of the court. Now it is just like the NBA team's logo on top of the picture of the trophy, the NBA Cup itself. And again, the colors are still really loud, but I like it. I think overall it works. You have to be able to look at a game, and if you're a casual fan, just clicking through the channels on a Tuesday or Friday night, be like, hey, why the hell is the court purple? It's because it's the NBA Cup. It's very recognizable when you're going through highlights, when you're looking back on past games. It's pretty easy to tell which of these games were tournament games for the NBA Cup and which of them was just regular season games in the middle of November. So there are still financial prizes for the winning team. I believe the winning team still gets like $500,000 each. And then you have $200,000 each for the second place team. And I believe there's even a financial incentive for the teams that actually advance past the group stage to the actual single elimination tournament. So all that being said, I think we weren't sure exactly what the significance of that $500,000 or financial prize would be for the winning team. But it ended up being pretty significant, in my opinion, based on the heightened intensity that we saw during the NBA in-season tournament last year. The Lakers ultimately ended up winning, and while a couple extra $100,000 is not going to be a huge impact for a guy like LeBron James or Anthony Davis, they're still sharing the locker room with, you know, 11 other guys, 12 other guys that are fighting for roster spots. Maybe they're on their first NBA contract, and they don't exactly know when that second NBA contract is going to come. That can be life-changing money for some of the people in that locker room, and they're in practice. You know, they're going to these games, traveling across the country with their team, like putting in a lot of effort into this. So I'm sure LeBron and Anthony Davis and all the superstars in the NBA want to win this award, not just for the extra money for themselves, but for those teammates on the end of the bench that are going through that battle with them that might not be as in great of a spot financially. So definitely worth noting that I think the financial prizes are, if anything, they might have increased a little bit, but it's the same premise. There is going to be some financial incentives for the winning teams. And of course, the structure of the tournament itself. A couple things to note. This is where all 30 teams are broken into six groups of five. So there's going to be three groups in the Eastern Conference and three groups in the Western Conference of five teams each. The NBA did their best to make these groups evenly, but they did this based on last year's regular season standings. So we're going to go through the groups here in a second, but it is worth noting that some groups, in my opinion, are pretty loaded. Some other groups are pretty weak, and you know, a lot can change even just between the end of last year's regular season standings and the rosters when you look at them this year. So we'll dive into that. But it is just worth noting again, not only is it important for the teams to show out and win during the group stage so they can advance, right? Because there is going to be, you know, one team from each group that advances from each conference, right? So that's a minimum of six teams right there, three from the East, three from the West, all group winners. And there's also going to be a wild card team from each conference, right? So basically the team with the best record slash most points, whatever, from the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference is also going to get a shot. So there's going to be eight teams total that advance to a traditional single elimination tournament. From there, it's pretty easy to understand. But it is worth noting that not only do these teams have to win during the group phase and get as good of a record as possible, but the first tiebreaker for any teams with the same record is going to be point differential. So teams have an extra incentive during NBA Cup games, if they get up 20 points, and this is typically where they'd pull their starters toward the end of the game or whatever, no, they're going to be incentivized at least to leave their starters in the game, to try to extend that deficit by as much as possible. I'm sure there's going to be some awkward interactions and some hurt feelings between coaches. I know we saw that a couple times last year, but I like that. I mean, it doesn't need to be the case all season long where teams are constantly trying to inflate their point differential, but for a couple games during November, for teams to really have an incentive to just like beat the shit out of the other team, That is notable. That is notable. And we're going to have to look at the scores from last night and decide, you know, what kind of hole some of these teams are in with the point differential already. So that is the last wrinkle I wanted to talk about. There are some other tiebreakers as well, but between record and point differential, I doubt anything else would come into play. I think the third tiebreaker is like total points, so whoever literally scores more points during the NBA Cup games. So let's keep it moving and talk about the groups themselves and ultimately predict the winners. Now, you're going to have to take my word for it again. I recorded this podcast on Monday. I didn't have any sound, but I didn't change any of my winners. My mind was not swayed by anything I saw last night. Almost all of my teams won at least their first in-season tournament game, so we're going to talk more about that. Let's start off with the West and what the NBA has defined as Group A. In this group, we have the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Los Angeles Clippers, Sacramento Kings, Houston Rockets, and Portland Trailblazers. So, last night, we did have two of these teams face off already, and that was a game between the Timberwolves and the Blazers in Portland. And the Trailblazers showed out, man. This one was pretty shocking. I actually saw a decent chunk of this game because it was the last one on. The Blazers ended up beating the Wolves by 14 points. I think it is more a little bit more panic for Minnesota than it is like, you know, let's everyone jump on the Trailblazers bandwagon. Like, that is still a team that has a lot of question marks, the young guys that need to develop. I think the biggest story out of Portland was Rob Williams, my guy, former Boston Celtic, part of that Drew Holiday trade that sent him to Portland. Rob Williams basically missed all of last season, so he was like a net zero for that Blazers team last year, but he finally is healthy. And when that dude plays, it's the same old Rob Williams. Like, he is so impactful on both ends of the court. He can just jump through the gym. He's an incredible rim protector, insane athlete, plays so much bigger than 6'9", and he was just all over the place against the Wolves, and they really didn't have anybody to match up with him athletically, even a team with like a, what, 4 or 5-time defensive player of the year in Rudy Gobert. Scoot Henderson looked pretty good. Jeremy Grant played well. Denny Avdija was awesome, and the Wolves were just out of sync all night from what I saw. So a 14-point L to the Trailblazers, that would lead me to not select the Wolves to come out of this group. I'm not going to go crazy and say Portland's going to win this group. However, I wasn't going to pick the Wolves anyway, but it is worth noting they already have a loss under their belt. So, again, out of those five teams, Timberwolves, Clippers, Kings, Rockets, and Blazers, I'm going with the Rockets. I'm super high on the Rockets. I love what I've seen from them. I believe they have the best record in the NBA currently out of that group of five. So, I like what I've seen from the Rockets. I think they're a really tough team to play with how many guys they have, just with how many insane athletes they have, young guys that are fighting for minutes, play with a lot of defensive intensity. I'm taking the Rockets, and I feel pretty good about that pick. Let's move on to Group B in the Western Conference, in which has the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Phoenix Suns, Los Angeles Lakers, San Antonio Spurs, and the Utah Jazz. We did have a game from Group B last night as well. That was between the Suns and the Jazz. That went about as how you would expect. Even without Kevin Durant, the Suns were able to pull out a win. I believe they won by, what, 12 points last night, if I'm not mistaken. Confirming it now, they actually only won by 8. But still, good win for the Suns. They beat up on a Jazz team that's basically tanking. And even though the Suns won, I'm actually going to take the Los Angeles Lakers to come out of Group B. Again, pretty good group here. You could make the argument for the Thunder, the Suns, or the Lakers, honestly. I don't know how you'd get there for the Spurs or the Jazz. But I just feel like, you know, the Suns have that injury to Kevin Durant. The Thunder have that injury to Chet Holmgreen, like we talked about. And that Chet Holmgreen injury really stinks for the Thunder because they're already missing Isaiah Hartenstein. So they're basically devoid of bigs. They're going to be playing the other Jalen Williams at center most of the time, if I had to guess. And he's pretty undersized to begin with. So I like the Lakers. For whatever reason, LeBron showed that he can flip that switch whenever he wants and really turn it on for a couple of regular season games in November when you smack an NBA in-season tournament logo over it. And they really got up for the challenge last year, and I think the Lakers are still a pretty frisky team. So I'm actually going to take them to advance out of Group B. Moving on to Group C, this is a pretty loaded group. We have the Denver Nuggets, Dallas Mavericks, New Orleans Pelicans, Golden State Warriors, and the Memphis Grizzlies. Out of this group, I actually have two teams advancing, right? I'm going to have, obviously, a group winner, and then I believe the wildcard team is going to come out of Group C as well. I'm going with the Warriors to outright win the group. They did obviously get that big win against Dallas, like we talked about. I believe they only won by a couple points last night, but still, really good win for the Warriors right there. They've been on fire. I believe they are top the Western Conference standings right now. I went out and called them frauds on my last podcast, and then they came in to the building in Boston and beat my Celtics at home. So that was pretty embarrassing for me. I don't know if it's actually going to continue or if I need to buy in on this team before the playoffs. I have a lot of time to change my mind on that or whatever. But right now, I like what I'm seeing out of Golden State. They're playing a 12-man rotation. I really liked what I saw from D'Anthony Melton last night. He was a guy, the only offseason addition I was particularly excited about, and he did not disappoint in the first full game I watched of him last night. So I think the Warriors are going to outright win this group, and I also have the Denver Nuggets advancing as the wild card. Again, Denver 7-3 right now, been playing at a really high level. The Mavs have been shaky. The Grizzlies are really banged up. The Pelicans are even more banged up. So I think both Golden State and Denver advances from Group C. Now kicking things over to the Eastern Conference, we have, in my opinion, the funniest group we have to talk about. The East Group A consists of the New York Knicks, the Orlando Magic, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Brooklyn Nets, and the Charlotte Hornets. Out of those groups, we had one tournament game last night. Actually, we had two tournament games last night. The first of which, the Magic beat the crap out of the Hornets by about 25 points. So not super surprising the Magic were able to pull out a win even without Paolo Banchero. And then you had the Knicks beat the 76ers by 12 points. So with that in mind, it actually really doesn't sway me off my pick, which is actually going to be the Brooklyn Nets. I think the Brooklyn Nets have been the best team out of this group during the regular season. You really can't argue that. I believe they have the best record, better record than the Magic, than the 76ers and the Knicks, and obviously the Hornets right now, or if not, they're within like one game of all those teams. And I just think the Nets, they know who they are, and I think that's the most positive thing you can say about the Nets. Like, I think they're the prime example of when you have an NBA team that maybe doesn't have any A-list stars or even any B-list stars, but if you have a bunch of guys that has been around the block, that know what their role is, and they just like buy in and embrace it, like, they have a guy in Cam Thomas that knows he's going to get the ball at the end of a close game, that is going to be their primary shot taker and shot maker. You have a nice point guard who's a two-way player in Dennis Schroeder. You have a guy in Nick Claxton that can really protect the rim. You have shooters and guys that can move without the ball like Cam Johnson and Dorian Finney-Smith, who's a great perimeter defender. Like, the team, they have a lot of pieces there that make sense and they're meshing together really well. And the Knicks really look like they're searching for an identity. They're already forced to be playing their guys and their starters like 40 minutes a night in November. Like, what is Tibbs doing? The defensive identity is totally out of whack, going from Isaiah Hartenstein to Karl Anthony Towns in the middle. I know that's led to issues, even though Towns has been pretty awesome offensively. And the Magic, of course, I really like them, but no Paolo Banchero. The Sixers, they've had one game from Joel Embiid, and it was last night, and he didn't look all that good against the Knicks. Paul George has played in a couple games. He's working back up. They lose Maxey. I just think the Nets are the most complete and the healthiest team out of that group, and even though they haven't played an in-season tournament game, I like them to advance out of Group A in the East. Moving on to East Group B, we have the Milwaukee Bucks, Indiana Pacers, Miami Heat, Toronto Raptors, and the Detroit Pistons. This is kind of a gnarly group right here. Like, nobody's really jumping out to me. The Pacers have started pretty slow. The Bucks have started pretty slow. I mean, frankly, all of these teams in the Eastern Conference have been terrible. I'm really bearing the lead here. We have two teams in the Eastern Conference right now that are above 500, and we haven't talked about any of them yet. And so the Milwaukee Bucks are interesting, but I'm actually going to go with the Indiana Pacers to advance from Group B. Obviously, they made it all the way to the in-season tournament finals last year. They're a tricky team. They play with a lot of pace. Their offense is fantastic, but their defense is abysmal. And on any given night, if the intensity's there, they have a great set of home fans, a tough arena to play in. They're a team that is primed for the in-season tournament. Maybe it's just my bias of seeing them excel last year, but if I'm picking between them or the Heat, that had like a late game meltdown last night against Detroit, which I should mention. So the Heat are already one game in the bag. The Bucks did end up beating the crap out of Toronto last night, so they're an advantage there. But the Pacers haven't played yet. I think they'll obviously play on Friday, and I still think that they're going to be the ones coming out of this group B in the East. And then finally, the last group that we need to talk about, the East Group C. This group is loaded. It is. It has the Boston Celtics, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Chicago Bulls, Atlanta Hawks, and the Washington Wizards. I really can just stop right there because, again, the Cavs and the Celtics are the only two teams in the East that are above 500 right now. The Cavs have been a juggernaut, 13-0, like I mentioned earlier in the episode. Celtics have been great in their own right, but they didn't do themselves any favors last night. They went out and they lost to the Atlanta Hawks at home by 1 point or 2 points, whatever it was. It was extremely close. Jason Tatum had a three in the corner that literally got halfway down the basket. Like, it entered the cylinder and then popped back up. And ultimately, that would have won the game. The Celtics still had a couple decent looks at it. But Dyson Daniels, my pick for most improved, was incredible last night. Really solid game from Jalen Johnson. He's like a full-blown star at this point. And they lost to the Hawks without Trae Young. So I'm upset about that, but we're not talking about that right now because I still think the Celtics have a chance to advance out of this group, but I think it would have to be the wild card. There's no reason for me to believe that the Cavs are going to slow down anytime soon, especially with the added pressure of the in-season tournament. They know what's at stake. They're on fire. They literally haven't lost a game all year. So I expect the Cavs to outright win this group. I expect the Celtics to still advance as the wild card because, again, none of those other groups in the East are really impressing me. So let's run through my final predictions for who will advance out of the group stage. In the West, Group A, I have the Rockets. I have Group B, the Lakers. Group C, I have the Warriors. And then the Nuggets advancing from Group C as well as the wild card. And then in the East, I have the Nets out of Group A, the Pacers out of Group B, and then the Cavs out of Group C, and the Celtics as the wild card also out of Group C. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid here, but I do still think with how many bad teams there are in the Eastern Conference, I think the Celtics should have the opportunity to beat up pretty bad on the Wizards and the Bulls. The Cavs will be a tough in-season tournament game that I'm looking forward to very much. So before I let you guys go, I do need to give you, I might as well just come out and say it now. I know we have a ton of tournament left, but I might as well just pick a winner for this thing, even though we're not going to know who it is for a month. And I'll give you my final in-season tournament prediction. And I'm going to go with the Cleveland Cavaliers over the Los Angeles Lakers. I think that there'd be a fun storyline there of LeBron versus Cleveland, give the media and ESPN something to hype up as we head into the NBA Cup, the second year of it. I can't go with the Celtics right now because the Cavs have not given me any reason to doubt them. They've just been dominant. I know the Celtics haven't played the Cavs yet, and I like to hope that the Celtics will get up for that game and play them very close. But again, the Celtics still aren't at full strength. They don't have Kristaps Porzingis. So I'm going to go with the Cavs right now because they haven't given me any reason to doubt them. I think that they'll have no problem advancing over the Nets, also coming out of the group stage. And then out of those teams in the West, you know, you could make the argument for the Rockets, Warriors, Nuggets. I mean, this is all a crapshoot, but I know if the Lakers really lock in for this event like they did last year and go all out, they're going to be a pretty tough team to beat. So my final tournament prediction is Cavs over Lakers. So that is going to do it for this episode, guys. I know I was kind of all over the place there since I really got derailed by not being able to get this podcast out on Monday night. I'll try to hit the unmute button next time. But that being said, I'm hoping that you guys enjoyed night one of the NBA Cup. We'll definitely do some follow-ups going over the NBA Cup action because, again, just from what I saw last night, the intensity is there. I think it was a little bit more entertaining than a normal regular season game in November. And so I like that the NBA is doing this event. I think last year was ultimately a success, and I expect this year to go a little bit smoother as well, being the second year of the tournament. So before I let you guys go, be sure to follow at Words with Wallace on everything. That includes Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to support the show on social media as well. That's at Words with Wallace on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok. Be sure to follow and support all the content there. And I will talk to you guys next week. Peace.